Drive Time on RTE Radio 1 with National Irish Bank. The bank that brought Danske Bank's international expertise to Ireland is now bringing the Danske Bank name.
Russia should stop being part of the problem and start being part of the solution. Strong words from NATO's Secretary General Anders Rasmussen at today's EU Foreign Ministers meeting in Luxembourg. Elaborating on the current crisis in eastern Ukraine, he held no punches, saying that Russia's hand is deeply engaged in this. But beyond the commonly held suspicions, what is the proof that Putin is pulling all the strings? A question I put to John Lough, a Russia expert at the Royal Institute of International Affairs, Chatham House.
I think the proof is we've seen a leader demonstrating great resolve over the past 6 to 8 weeks, doing the public communication in a very emphatic fashion. This is a man who clearly believes he has a mission, that he is fulfilling that mission. And his speech in the Kremlin on March the 18th, when effectively they celebrated the annexation of Crimea, was an indication that he was firmly in charge of this and, I think, the instigator of it.
In order to have instigated this, though, and particularly what's going on in eastern Ukraine as opposed to what happened in Crimea, there would have to have been quite literally years of advance planning and placing of Russian assets in eastern Ukraine, would there not?
I don't know if I agree with that. I think that there is certainly a plan is being executed. But it's not a particularly complicated one, because the Russians know that there's a great deal of frustration in parts of southeastern Ukraine. This is a relatively depressed industrial area. It's the industrial heartland of Ukraine, where, as a result of lack of reforms over the last 20 years, and in many cases the incompetence of successive governments in Kiev, people are not living particularly well, even though they are among some of the highest wage earners in Ukraine. So I don't think it's been very hard to exploit social grievances. Russian propaganda has been carrying a very simple message over recent weeks. I've been watching this a couple of times a day for several weeks now. And you would be astounded by the level of disinformation and the impression being cultivated by Russian media, which, of course, is accessible in those border areas of Ukraine, that a group of people has come to power in Kiev who are predominantly fascists, anti-Semites, anti-Russian individuals who are going to discriminate against Russian speakers in Ukraine. They use this argument in Crimea, and it's now being transported to the southeastern regions of Ukraine. So I don't think it's been hard to get the population there frightened and fearful of what might happen next in Ukraine. You've got 40,000 troops on the border. You've got indications that Russia publicly is very concerned about the overall security situation. So I think in those circumstances, it's not hard then to find supporters for a particular cause, which is to say it's important to federalize Ukraine. It's important for those eastern regions to have more autonomy, to be able to build their own relations with Russia, for example, to be able to keep trading with Russia, because lots of jobs there are at stake if those relations were to be interrupted. And then to simply direct a group of people to take over police stations, local administrations, all the sorts of things they've been doing in up to 10 locations in that part of the country. It's not actually, I think, that difficult.
What's the big picture goal for Putin here? Is it simply a conflict abroad that will boost his popularity back at home, or are there bigger geopolitical considerations?
Well, I think it's fair to say that things always happen for more than one reason. I think there are a number of objectives here on President Putin's agenda. The first of these, and the most prominent, is to stop Ukraine breaking away from Russia and falling into the embrace of the West. This is a very, very deep concern, and it relates to the fact that over 20 years ago, when the Soviet Union broke up, Russia did not find it in itself the ability to come to terms with Ukraine's independence. Formally, they accepted it, but they didn't believe that this was something sustainable over the longer term. And in some ways, they saw themselves as being inseparable from Ukrainians. So the Russians always distinguished between Ukraine's formal independence, which they recognized, and what they called its ability to stand on its own two feet. And I don't think they ever accepted that it would genuinely be able to do that. And despite signing a state treaty in 1997 with Ukraine, recognizing its border, and despite agreeing 3 years earlier to protect its security after it gave up its nuclear weapons, to respect its territorial integrity and its sovereignty, Russia decided, and Putin effectively said this on March the 18th, that Ukraine hadn't behaved well, and therefore Russia effectively reserved the right to review all those commitments that it had made. So it's almost as though Ukraine and Ukrainians are being punished for not towing the Russian line.
Those then are the bigger, the long-term strategic interests or goals. In the shorter term, and the tactics that he is pursuing now, are they designed to illustrate to Kiev, you are subservient to Russia's interests, you are within our sphere of influence, do what we say or you will be crushed? Or are they actually trying to draw Kiev into a shooting war?
I don't think that they want to get into a shooting war. That would be extremely dangerous for them. And although they're taking enormous risks here, I think that's something they'll seek to avoid. What they're doing is to put increasing pressure on the interim government in Kiev, which they refuse to recognize and basically refuse to deal with. They are showing that they're using a number of instruments now. They've got the economic instrument through the gas price, which they've raised by 80%, cancelling previous discounts. They're putting political pressure on them to agree to constitutional reform and ensure that the regions of Ukraine have greater powers. They've got troops on the border, and now they seem, as far as we can tell, to be the instigators of these disturbances by so-called pro-Russian forces. So they're turning up the heat, and they want to demonstrate that the authorities in Kiev are not in control, they don't have the ability to run the country, they lack legitimacy, and that they are not taking into account the interests of all the people in Ukraine, but most particularly those who are identified as being close to Russia because they speak Russian, some cases maybe ethnic Russians, but that group of people concentrated in the southeast of the country on Russia's borders. So I think this is an effort to demonstrate not just to Kiev that Russia means business and is going to reformat the way that this country is governed. It's also a signal to the West and to Ukraine's Western partners that this is our territory. Don't think you know how to run it. And we very much doubt you've got either the willpower or the economic resources to do it. We have both, and we are going to do this the Russian way. We need your agreement to do that, because if we can't stabilize things there, life is going to get very, very difficult indeed. And perhaps we would have to then intervene in some form. Of course, we'd much rather avoid that. So I think that that's the agenda going into these four-party talks, which are planned for Thursday in Geneva.
John Lough, a Russia and Eurasia expert at the international affairs think tank Chatham House.